This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. President Donald Trump this week spoke with several world leaders by phone about international sanctions on North Korea over nuclear testing. According to White House records, Trump said to British Prime Minister Theresa May, quote, "Now is not the time to talk to North Korea," and that he was considering all options to deal with the nation. In his phone call with Chinese President Xi Jinping, Trump discussed China restricting oil sales to North Korea. Speaking to the press about the potential for U.S. military action, Trump said, quote, "Certainly that's not our first choice, but we will see what happens." Trump also tweeted on September 5th that he was, quote, "allowing Japan and South Korea to buy a substantially increased amount of highly sophisticated military equipment from the United States." My guest is John Pfeffer, co-director of Foreign Policy in Focus at the Institute for Policy Studies in Washington, D.C., and a Tom Dispatch regular. In fact, he just wrote a piece on Tom Dispatch called "Trump and the Geopolitics of Crazy." It's about the North Korea situation. Welcome to the program, John.
Thank you for having me on the show.
And I suppose this is not the first time in these, eight short months that Trump has been in power that people have thought, what happens when you have two unhinged leaders that are well armed, or at least one is very well armed and the other one claims they're well armed, going at it. And we've had, of course, tensions with US and North Korea for a long time, even pre-Trump. Every time I cover this story, we sort of wonder, is this it? Is this the time when the US will go to war with North Korea? But it's hard to tell. However, with Trump in power, anything can happen. So are you worried about what's happening now?
Well, I always have a certain low level degree of anxiety. And that low level of anxiety certainly has spiked a bit during the Trump era. I tend to believe that both sides understand that the threat of war is omnipresent, but that war itself would be absolutely devastating to both sides and to other countries as well. The United States understands that war in and around the Korean Peninsula would cause hundreds of thousands of deaths of our allies, but also of U.S. soldiers and citizens. The North Korea understands that war could very well lead to the elimination of the regime in Pyongyang. And because both sides understand the stakes involved, that they are extremely reluctant to actually go to war.
So what has changed right now? Is it simply a war of words that Kim Jong-un is responding to when he makes threats and even actually carries out tests, and then the U.S. under Trump responding with his own threats? Or is there something specifically different now than we've seen before, say, under Obama?
Well, I mean, obviously, as you said, we have two leaders who in some sense complement each other in terms of their rhetoric, and it seems their willingness to at least consider military options. With North Korea, Kim Jong-un has definitely accelerated the program of nuclear tests and missile tests. One optimistic reading of that is that the North Korean leader anticipates having some kind of negotiations with the United States in which he declares a moratorium on testing. And prior to such moratorium, he simply wants to get those tests in as much as possible to develop his capability as sufficiently as possible. With the United States and Donald Trump, of course, Trump is not kind of wedded to what seems to be the traditional geopolitical strategies toward North Korea, which, for better or for worse, are roughly carrot and stick. In other words, providing some incentives and, of course, some penalties as well in an effort to kind of push North Korea in a particular direction. Trump is not interested, it seems, in that kind of diplomatic game. He is more interested in kind of either scaring a country into doing what the United States wants it to do, or even potentially negotiating with it mano a mano, but dispensing with the diplomatic niceties. So these two styles could complement complement each other. In other words, the two sides could sit down and negotiate in a kind of direct fashion, or on the other hand, there could be greater friction as both sides become ever more frustrated with one another.
Let's talk about international sanctions. Trump is taking aim at North Korea's source of oil. North Korea, I understand, gets a majority of its oil from China. So Trump is pressuring China to cut off that supply or to tighten it at least. It's also getting some of its supplies from Russia, but Vladimir Putin just flat out rejected this week reducing or cutting off its supply of oil to North Korea. Is Trump going to have any success using the threat of cutting off the oil spigot?
No. I mean, he doesn't really have any influence to any large extent in Beijing or in Moscow. And both Russia and China are really concerned about the longevity, the viability, if you will, of the North Korean regime. If a very strict oil embargo were imposed, well, then we would see North Korea spiral down, and in spiraling down, start to put more emphasis on what might be considered more desperate measures to get the attention of the international community, to get the attention of the United States, to get a place at the table. Right now, Russia and China are calculating, look, you know, North Korea is getting some oil. Its industry is and its agriculture are kind of puttering along. So it isn't desperate at the moment. It's not going to resort to desperate means. And so I think both China and Russia are going to be very reluctant to turn the screws tighter on North Korea. If anything, they'll be doing the opposite. In other words, trying to persuade Washington to negotiate.
Right. So the U.S. is also, at least under Trump, considering broader sanctions. And there are already sanctions in place against North Korea, right? Trump tweeted, the U.S. is considering, in addition to other options, stopping all trade with any country doing business with North Korea. That's an even broader set of sanctions. I mean, how could Trump pull that off, cut off all trade with any country doing business with North Korea?
Well, the short answer is he couldn't. I mean, in many ways, it's a threat without any reasonable expectation of follow through, because, of course, China is the country that has the most trade with North Korea, upwards of, depending on the year we're looking at, anywhere from 50 to 90% of trade with North Korea. And for the United States to stop trade with China, well, China is the United States' top trading partner. So
Americans are addicted to Chinese-made products. I mean, there's exactly. Would devastate the U.S. economy to do that. Exactly. I mean, these are empty threats. They also make the U.S. look crazy to make such threats.
Well, it certainly makes Trump look quite crazy. I think foreign leaders are well aware that there are other forces at work in the United States, Congress, of course, but also institutions, economic institutions, businesses that have a very different attitude. I mean, if you look at any of the other kind of pressing issues of the day, NAFTA or the Iran nuclear agreement, there are other countervailing forces in the United States that are pushing hard for, in the first case, preservation of NAFTA in some form, and in the second case, preservation of the nuclear deal with Iran. With North Korea, the challenge is that, well, the business community in the United States is not really invested in North Korea. It doesn't even have any expectation of investing in North Korea. So it's not really pushing hard for any kind of negotiated settlement. There's not a huge Korean-American community, as there is, say, a Cuban-American community, that's pressing one way or another for negotiations. So the problem with the United States and with Trump's threats is that even though there are other institutions and that foreign leaders are aware of those institutions, they don't really have the kind of impact that they would have on other issues in our foreign policy universe.
Let's talk about South Korea. South Korea has had a relatively recent change in leadership, and Trump seems to be a little frustrated with the fact that South Korea wants appeasement with its neighbor to the north, with its cousins, if you will, to the north. And Trump even tweeted, South Korea is finding, as I have told them, that their talk of appeasement with North Korea will not work. They only understand one thing. And then Trump, of course, announced that he was going to be expanding the sales of sophisticated military equipment to South Korea. Is the U.S. pushing South Korea to do something that it doesn't necessarily want to do? And will it succeed?
Well, South Korea and the new leader, Moon Jae-in, they're in a very difficult situation. You mentioned before the attempt to get Vladimir Putin to sign on to an oil embargo. Well, that actually was Moon Jae-in, the South Korean president, making that appeal to Vladimir Putin. In other words, even though Moon Jae-in has pushed, and I would call it an engagement policy with North Korea, not an appeasement policy, even though he's pushed an engagement policy, because they're in a military alliance with the United States, they also basically have to follow through on what the United States asks of them. So I think that's a major issue when it comes to U.S.-South Korean relations. At the same time, even as the United States is making these demands on South Korea to follow through on its embargo with North Korea and to suspend all discussion of engaging the North, the Trump administration has taken this time of all times to call into question the key component in the U.S.-South Korean economic relationship, that is the free trade agreement between the United States and South Korea. Trump has denounced the agreement, says that it's unfair to the United States, and has threatened to suspend it. So you can imagine that folks in Seoul are hearing some very mixed messages coming from the Trump administration. At least when they look at Pyongyang, they get one message. It may not be a message they like particularly, but it's consistent and somewhat predictable. From Washington, on the other hand, the messages have been very, very all over the board, you could say.
Right. John, is the prospect of war with North Korea simply becoming likelier with Trump in power? Is Trump pushing North Korea closer to war than we've ever really had in recent years, and to an extent that is just not necessary?
Well, often we don't really know how close we've come to war until some time after the threat has passed. So, for instance, we only discovered some months afterwards in 1994 that during the nuclear crisis at that time, that the Clinton administration was considering very seriously a bombing attack on Pyongyang. And it was only the intercession of Jimmy Carter and later negotiators for the agreed framework agreement that averted that risk. We know that, Trump, of course, has said that all options are on the table. But we also know that the Pentagon, James Mattis and others, recognize the risks of war and have been very reluctant to talk about those risks in any serious manner. We also know that, for instance, Steve Bannon, shortly before he left the administration, came out and said that military option, frankly, is not on the table. And this is, from a guy who has no problem talking about military interventions around the world when necessary. So I think that was a real window onto the realities in Washington, that even though they talk about military options on the table, it really isn't on the table. From Pyongyang's point of view, again, they know that any attempt at attacking South Korea, attacking Japan, even attacking Guam, would probably bring some kind of a response, and that response would be overwhelming. And North Korea, regardless of what nuclear material, nuclear armaments it might have amassed over the last couple of years, is woefully outgunned by the United States. But all of that being said, the risk of war on the Korean Peninsula is not so much through deliberate calculation, rather it's a function potentially of miscalculation. And so the possibility of miscalculation, of an accident, of a misperception, of one side doing something that it doesn't intend as an act of war, but is interpreted by the other side as an act of war, well, all of that becomes accentuated during this period.
John, one of the things that we have heard from North Korea that has sent like conspiracy theorists into a tizzy, I don't know if you've seen this, is North Korea's threat to launch an electromagnetic pulse attack on the United States that would directly target civilians here in the US by basically destroying our electrical grid. Is there any truth to that? Is that a real threat? Is that something that could actually happen?
No. No, no, it couldn't.
Glad I checked with you.
I mean, Newt Gingrich, you know, he pushed the EMP threat for many years. And, you know, it's been widely discredited by scientists, policymakers. North Korea, of course, might, you know, like to believe that it has that capability. And it certainly has capability, for instance, hacking. And I mean, I'm not saying that North Korea doesn't have capability of doing harmful things, but an EMP, no.
All right. Well, finally, John, what do you think that Pentagon officials are thinking about all of this? Because, for example, in Afghanistan, Trump has turned over the war plans to the generals. He has consulted with generals on North Korea this week. Could cooler heads prevail at the Pentagon, and could they be allowed to take over dealings on North Korea?
Well, I certainly hope so. I mean, you'll notice with the speech yesterday by Nikki Haley.
And by the way, it's kind of scary to think that the generals being in charge are a good thing for avoiding war, but yes.
That is a sign of the times, I'm afraid. But that's been the case pretty much since Trump took office, that the generals represented a more sane or a saner option
except in Afghanistan, where they seem to be leading an expansion of the war. However, I should mention that.
That's correct. Generals, generally speaking, are loath, they're risk averse when it comes to conflicts that they haven't yet engaged in. As for conflicts they're already engaged in, that's another story altogether. So Afghanistan is in a different category from, say, Iran or North Korea. But yes, I mean, this risk-averse tendency of the Pentagon, one hopes, will prevail. And as I was saying, Nikki Haley's speech at the American Enterprise Institute yesterday, which focused almost entirely on Iran, suggests that the administration itself, the ideologues, if you will, within the administration, will be focusing on severing the nuclear agreement with Iran between now and in October, when the next recertification of Iranian compliance comes due. One hopes that while the ideologues are kind of focused on that, that maybe, just maybe, some folks in the State Department through the New York channel will engage the North Koreans, and that the generals in the Trump administration will kind of just prevent the worst kinds of militaristic scenarios from prevailing. That's the most optimistic kind of scenario I can give you at this point.
Well, John, we'll post a link to your latest piece on Tom Dispatch from our site later today. I want to thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me on the show.
My guest is John Pfeffer, co-director of Foreign Policy and Focus at the Institute for Policy Studies in Washington, D.C., and a Tom Dispatch regular. We've been discussing whether Donald Trump is pushing North Korea into war. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.